It gives me great pleasure to welcome our good friends from the World Economic Forum this afternoon. They will be making a preview of their Global Trade Enabling Report 2009. And it's particularly great, particularly nice for us to be associated with the World Economic Forum, disrespecting to welcome here to this house. The World Economic Forum has a net, has a wide net of stakeholders involved in their activities, and it's not only business, but NGOs, academia, media, international agencies, etc. So what they do is they listen to what's happening on the ground. They observe it, they analyze it, and then they disclose the results. And this analysis, this diagnosis, I think, becomes essential when one is dealing with projects and ideas such as aid for trade. So without further ado, let me now offer the floor to Richard Seymour, Managing Director of the World Economic Forum, and welcome his colleagues, Margaret and Professor Robert Lawrence of Harvard, and there at the far end too is John, sorry, didn't get your last name, but Mulvatar. And then Marco Juan to the far left, he is with the WTO Secretariat. He had some contribution to make in this report on trade and finance. I couldn't resist making that little commercial. Over to you, Richard.
Thanks very much, Deputy Director General Yara. And thanks to you, our colleagues here at the World Trade Organization. We would like to simply take a few moments to give delegates a flavor of some important work that has been evolving over the last couple of years in the World Economic Forum. The Forum is a private sector organization, but it is not a business representative organization. It does not lobby on behalf of companies. Rather, what the Forum serves as is a platform for dialogue and also collaboration, concrete collaboration involving the private sector with other actors in the international system, such as governments or international organizations, the academic community, scientific community, civil society, and the like. And from time to time, a number of our companies, our industry partners we call them, decide to work on some specific projects that they think would add some value to international discussion or action, the public interest, if you will. And a couple of years ago, a number of leading logistic and transport companies in the Forum's networks, who are extremely familiar with both the ease and sometimes impediments in moving goods and services across borders, thought that perhaps a useful application of the World Economic Forum's platform would be to develop some sort of a comprehensive benchmarking tool to serve as a guide for decision makers in the private and public sectors about how to improve the flow of goods and services across borders. We in the Forum have a standing competence in this area developed over the last several decades. You may be familiar with our Global Competitiveness Report, which comes out each year and assesses national competitiveness across many, many different parameters. We're pleased today to share with you the announcement of our Global Enabling Trade Report for this year. It's the second year we've released this particular analysis. This is an exercise which is intended to be not just a static piece of paper, but rather a tool to motivate and inform and point the way toward productive areas of dialogue within and across the public and private sectors in these crucial areas of behind-the-border considerations that affect how well countries reap the benefits of opportunities indeed created by the kinds of negotiations that occur here at the World Trade Organization, where market opportunities are created, but sometimes there are less than optimal conditions behind borders for that stand in the way of enabling trade to flow, and therefore countries to reap the benefits in terms of economic growth that increased trade integration can provide. We think that this particular report today has relevance to the trade facilitation negotiations that are a very important part of the Doha development agenda, as well as indeed the theme of the WTO meeting today and tomorrow on aid for trade. We think that some of the analysis that's been developed here that my colleagues will elaborate on can be a potentially useful tool to guide discussion among countries as to where aid for trade could usefully be directed in order to reduce impediments either in terms of public institutional frameworks and capacity on the one hand or private sector productive capacity on the other. I'd like to thank again the WTO and a number of other institutional partners who have been involved in this undertaking to help develop the database for this analysis, as well as a number of authors of individual chapters who have written some analysis that augments or supplements some of the quantitative work that you'll see in the indices. I particularly want to thank the authors of the report, who are Robert Lawrence, a professor at Harvard University, and my colleagues at the forum, Margareta Zenziak, who heads up this particular part of our competitiveness or team working on the enabling trade report area, and John Movenzato, who's a senior director based in our New York office, who has responsible for mobility industries. With that, let me turn it over to Professor Lawrence to take us through some of the findings. And I do want to indicate that there will be a reception following just outside the chambers. And my colleague John Movenzato will later moderate some question and answer opportunities and then direct you to the reception thereafter. With that, Professor Lawrence.
Thank you very much, Deputy Director General Hara, and ladies and gentlemen. It's really a pleasure for us to come here to present this report. We are very mindful that we come at a time when world trade is basically plummeting, when the data that we've seen for the first quarter of this year is really quite alarming. I'm sure you've heard many times today already, we've actually seen declines that are larger than the declines during the Great Depression. That is mainly the result of the crisis. Obviously, demand has been falling, and we're experiencing a very violent inventory cycle. But we can also look at this picture and appreciate the degree to which the world has become dependent on international trade. If ever we need persuading of how interdependent we are, I think the experience in the first 4 months are proof positive of our degree of interdependence. Now, there are a lot of concerns about protectionism, and indeed, in our report, we join others like the G20 who have expressed these concerns. And we draw on a number of reports issued by the World Trade Organization and the World Bank, which make clear that there has been an increase in a number of measures that impede trade, even if technically several of them can't be defined as violating obligations. And it's also no surprise, given the economic conditions, that the demands for protection have increased. And in fact, government's ability to supply protection has also increased, as governments have become increasingly involved in taking over banks, whose lending they can now steer in some direction or another, and in implementing large fiscal programs where the temptation is to buy domestically. But I think the general tenor so far is that, by and large, the global system seems to be holding the line, and I think it is in no small measure due to the fact that we do have a system based on the rule of law. But in a sense, a lot of the concerns, a lot of the focus has been on the negative. How do we avoid protection? What we're trying to do in this report is actually to accentuate the positive, to talk about the measures that actually need to be taken in order not simply to avoid a vicious downward cycle, but how to turn it into a more virtuous process in which countries actually help each other pull out of the recession. And so what we're trying to show is that there are strategies that need to be adopted by countries individually or collectively that need a focus. And they, of course, focusing on border barriers and rules of trade are critically important, but that's only the beginning. International trade, increasingly we become aware of, depends on far more than that. We try to take a comprehensive view of the elements that enable international trade, and we provide a lot of empirical evidence which justifies the perspective that we are adopting, whether it's the customs operation, whether it's the regulatory framework, the telecommunications. All of these, the general business environment, are critical in driving international trade. We also hope that this report is going to be make a contribution to policy, both from the individual national perspective and from the global perspective. We are well aware that our report, which is basically drawing on data from many, many sources, is imperfect. We don't claim to have captured the full story of any one of your countries in this particular report. But what we do hope is to provoke discussion in many of your countries about where you stand, not only relative to countries that are much wealthier than you, but indeed to your peer group. So what we hope to do, and also, how do you stand on different dimensions of trade? Perhaps, and in fact, we will present evidence in a moment. Many of your border barriers actually have been lowered considerably. But the trade isn't taking place in particular, and you'll be able to see there, because other parts of your system are not working well. And so we hope that by showing, by benchmarking where countries stand relative to other countries and to their peers, that can provoke them into thinking about where the highest returns might be as they try to think about stimulating international trade. We have also changed the methodology in our report. And we should emphasize this. We've improved it. Last year's report only took account of enabling imports. This report includes an export perspective. And some countries' rankings have changed as a result. We don't want to read into this an indication that their performance has necessarily changed. Over time, however, what we hope to do is to establish benchmarks for each country so that it will be able to evaluate how it's doing over time, as well as how it's done in comparison to its peer groups. Let me also say that there is empirical evidence in this report that is very interesting. Because, as you might expect, if one country does do better in trade facilitation, in enabling trade, it turns out its neighbors benefit. So this is, by its very nature, a win-win activity. And this documented evidence in the report actually suggests that aid for trade is something which rich countries have an interest in, as well as poor countries, because the benefits from this aid will not only accrue to the countries that invest, but will also accrue to the other countries who now find their trade being stimulated. So both if you adopt a long-term perspective, a development perspective, you can see that each country has an interest in seeing its neighbors develop because of the promotion of trade. And specifically at this time, if we think about the positive measures which we ought to be taking in order to reignite global growth, this report, we hope, will make a contribution in helping countries prioritize. So with that, let me turn it over to my colleague, Margareta, who is going to elaborate on our findings. Thank you.
Lauren, and thank you for sticking around until now. I would like to talk you through the main methodological outline and some of the results, also give you a taste of the results of the report that's going to be released tomorrow. And I have actually a PowerPoint presentation. I hope you, we were not able to put it up, but I hope you have it in front of you. We have printed a few copies, so you should be able to access it. And if not, you should be able to follow also without having the presentation. First of all, a little bit about the background on this report. As has been mentioned already earlier, this report was developed by the industry partners of the Forum's Logistics and Transportation Community. It has been launched for the first time last year. It has followed a long process of about a year and a half of development of the main methodology. And it actually aims at provoking discussions about the barriers that that inhibit trade across the 121 countries that we assess, and also make aware of what are the measures that need to be taken in order to reduce the cost of trade just beyond the simple or the usual measures of trade policy related measures that we usually take into account. Moving to slide number 3, as I said, the results are being used for a number of activities. First of all, we use it to enable public and private dialogue. We do this along our at the occasion of our regional meetings at the World Economic Forum, but we also hope that these results are being used by other people in countries at the country level to enable public-private dialogue on how to enable trade in the national environment. We then hope that it will help to inform policymaking and prioritize reform. And last but not least, as we plan to do this exercise over a longer period of time, we hope that it will help to monitor progress, as been mentioned by Professor Lawrence also earlier. On slide number 4, you will see what is the core of the report. This is the Enabling Trade Index. And this is the methodology that we developed in cooperation with a number of international organizations active in the area of trade, such as also the WTO, the UNCTAD, the World Bank, International Trade Center, and the like, and also the industry partners, in order to assess the trading environment in all the countries that we measure. And you can see here that we take into account 4 broad categories. First of all, we look at market access, which looks at the market access to domestic markets, but also to foreign markets. We then secondly, as the goods travel across the border, we look at border administration. How efficient is it? How transparent is it? Is it very costly to import goods? Does it take a long time and the like? We then also look at the transport and telecommunications infrastructure, because this is important for communications between buyers and sellers, but it is also important for all types of automation of customs procedures and the like. And last but not least, we also assess the overall business environment, in how far it is conducive to trade. We look at the regulatory environment, but here we also in particular look at the aspects related to physical security, and here we include both, for example, the threat of terrorism, but also the common crime and violence, and in how far it affects the cost of trading. Under those 4 main categories, you will find 9 pillars of enabling trade, and these are this is the way how we group the indicators in order to come up with the final results at the end. On page 5, you will find the main rankings of the Enabling Trade Index, the result of this exercise. And on the left-hand side, you can see the top 10. You can see that Singapore is ranked first among the 121 countries that we assess, followed by Hong Kong, 2 economies that are very open and that have been pursuing open policies for a very long time, followed also by Switzerland and a number of, in particular, Nordic countries that are also known for being fairly open to trade. At 6th rank, we find Canada, and then Austria and the Netherlands at 9th and 10th. If you look at the right-hand side of the slide, at the right-hand side table, you see that a number of the big economies, of the big traders, such as Germany, ranks 12th, United States ranks 16th, and we will take a look at the results a little bit later, the detailed results for the United States as well. We also see, for example, that Malaysia ranks a relatively high 28th, China 49th, and we see that the Russian Federation, for example, is 109th, a fairly low showing for the Russian Federation here. Towards the end of the ranking, we find a number of least developed economies, in particular African countries. Here, just to example, Bangladesh is 111th, and Chad, which is the poorest performer in the entire sample that we assess, 121st. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 6, you can see a few details of the results which are here presented at the pillar level. So you can see, for example, that a country like Singapore, which is has a very open trade environment, ranks number one first among the 121 countries in a number of factors: efficiency of customs administration, import-export procedures, transport services, regulatory environment are all excellent and second to none in the entire world. However, even Singapore has two areas that we could identify where improvements could further enable trade. And this is the availability and quality of transport infrastructure and also the use of ICTs, information communication technologies. When we take a look at the United States, which ranked overall 16th, we see that that the performance is slightly different. Here, United States is a world-class transport infrastructure that's available and of very high quality, ranked third. But we also see that in terms of domestic and foreign market access, the United States performs significantly less well, ranked at 49th. And this is mainly due to the very very low margin of preference that the United States obtains in foreign markets that we take into account also here in this indicator. And last but not least for the United States, an important factor is that businesses are concerned about the lack of physical security in the country. So here, the threat of terrorism, but also common crime and violence are considered as adding to the cost of doing business. When we look at the example of China, and we compared, we've added at the very bottom in the last line the GDP per capita. In general, most of the results for most of the countries are very well correlated with the GDP per capita. The wealthier country in general, the more open it is to trade. And when you compare the results of on the index with the ranking among the 121 countries in terms of GDP per capita, we see some interesting results. For example, Singapore, although only 21st in terms of GDP per capita, ranks number one. So it outperforms compared to the GDP level. When you look at China, China ranks 49th in the overall ranking and 77th in the sample in terms of GDP per capita. So for its level of wealth, it performs actually relatively well compared to many other countries. Yet, we still see that domestic and foreign market access, and here when we look at the detailed results, we see that it's the domestic market access that's still hampered by relatively high tariffs, but also that the access to foreign markets for Chinese exporters is relatively inhibited still at this stage. An even more interesting case here is Russia, where we see that despite a fairly high GDP per capita, ranked 44th, Russia ranks only a very low 109th in the entire index. And here in particular, very few indicators are more or less in line with Russia's GDP ranking. Availability and use of information communication technologies, to a lesser extent, transport infrastructure and transport services, but most of the other factors just compare very unfavorably with the overall ranking in terms of GDP per capita. So Russia significantly underperforms compared to what could be expected. In particular, the domestic and foreign market access of 113th stands out here as being particularly negative, as one of the poorest performances that we see in the sample of 121. Last but not least, Chad is an interesting case as well, because, and it's very topical at this meeting about aid for trade today, because we see that in the case of Chad, a lot of progress has been achieved with respect to enabling access to markets, both domestic markets in Chad and also to the access to foreign markets for the exporters who export from Chad. So here, Chad ranks 50th. Significantly better compared to the GDP per capita. However, we can also see that given the very low performance across all the other indicators that we capture here, it is hard to imagine that exports from Chad are going to be competitive or that imports into Chad will be able to access Chad at a low price in order to be competitive in the local market. Efficiency of customs administration, basically all the areas that we take into account can be considered problem areas. And the same message can actually be even strengthened when you look at slide 7. And you can see here we have compared three groups of countries across the main categories that we take into account in the indicator. And you can see that for the average of LDCs, we see the same story that I've just described for Chad, or maybe in a slightly different variation, but the main message is very similar. We can see that in market access, the least developed countries outperform both the BRIC economies, so Brazil, Russia, and India, and China, as well as the OECD members. So those countries have liberalized and they have gained access to the target markets in a way that has not been achieved in many much significantly wealthier countries. However, there are still significant barriers that impede them from trading, keep them from trading, which are related to transport and communications infrastructure, border administration, for example, and business environment is more, to a less extent, is at the level of the BRIC economies. So this is an interesting information for the aid for trade agenda, obviously at the very aggregate level, but this can be as well drilled down to the country level, and you can look in the report that's going to come out tomorrow. You will find all the details at the country level. There are country profiles at the end of the book that you can access online. In the last slide, you will see that we are going to launch the report tomorrow at 11 a.m. Geneva time, and you will be able to access all those details, online. And I hope they will be useful in your work. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to our presenters for that overview of the report and the index. We recognize that it's been a very long day for all of you, but we would like to invite questions and comments from the floor, please. So if you could please raise your hand if you have a question or a comment. Anyone? Yes. If you could please identify yourself as well.
Yes, I'm from the private sector. My name is Ajesh Patel. The question I'd like to ask, Rita, is that in relation to your surveys and research that you did you take into account the issue of travel ease and visa requirements and so on and so forth as an impediment to trade? Thank you.
No, we did not explicitly take into account the visa impediments. We have decided to focus actually on the trade of goods. Because of the strong focus on trade facilitation, we focus on the trade of goods. And we have therefore focused on the way the goods move across border. We did not take into account the visa requirements as such.
Yes, question over there, please.
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering as to why you chose to put domestic and foreign market access together and did not disaggregate that indicator. Thank you.
Basically, the reason was that we do not use weightings in this indicator. So in order we only had two variables for the, so it's a very technical answer. We only had two variables that capture the foreign market access, and we have a number of more that capture the domestic market access. So we decided to merge them together in order to have a more appropriate weighting, what we thought, because otherwise we would have given too much weight to just these two variables that assess the foreign market access.
That comment. Inevitably, when you do an exercise like this, it's going to have large elements of arbitrariness. And you have a choice. We're compiling data from a lot of different sources. And the question is how to aggregate them. And we're trying to do it in a rather neutral way. So we give the various indicators pretty equal weight. And so we will acknowledge that, the ultimate scores are subject to quite a lot of arbitrary aggregation. And so that's why we're trying to release not just simply those final scores, but the underlying data, so that you can, in fact, parse it and get behind those aggregate numbers in order to get a better feel for why any country is getting the scores that they are. but we would be the first to acknowledge that they could be combined in many other ways and would give rather different results. Nonetheless, there is some degree of plausibility in the rankings. They do accord with our broad priors, but we would mention that these are a starting point for a conversation, as opposed to a grading system in which, you know, we would seriously allocate resources. So we're saying, use this, look at it, think about why we're getting this. Some of you may think, no, we're going to dismiss this result on solid grounds. We're willing to accept that. That's the spirit in which we offer it to you.
Other questions? Yes, please.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask for further clarification on the four criteria that you use. Which of those criteria plays more or greater role? And then secondly, what kind of methodology did you use? Did you use poll survey or also did you extract from hard data? Thank you.
We used, it's hard to say which of the, we try to give equal weights to concepts, right? So we did not look at, and the way, you know, the way we measured those concepts is that we gave more, we thought more or less those factors are more or less equally important in our point, from our point of view, to enabling trade. So all the there's a hierarchical structure. The four main components that I mentioned earlier have an equal weight, and each of the pillars have an equal weight in the form, in one of the four main components. So it's hard to identify one variable that has higher weight than the other ones. The variables, the weight of each variable results basically from this hierarchical structure that we have. In terms of data, we used two different data sources. We had data from our executive opinion survey that the World Economic Forum is conducting annually. This is data, we poll basically about 14,000, 13,000 to 14,000 business executives in all the countries every year, and we ask also a number of questions that are related to trade and to the business environment. And we also use, this is about one-third of the entire indicators, and the rest are taken from hard data from different sources, from international organizations mainly, International Trade Center, the World Bank, a lot of indicators, also ITU as well, IATA as well, we get some indicators and the like.
There was another question over
here. Thank you very much. I'm Peter Lunenburg from the South Center. I want to return to the question of market access and the indicators you use. I've been looking at indicators that measure market access, and if you, for example, look at the World Bank, the overall trade restrictiveness index, it does not capture, for example, a specific tariffs. So my question to you is, what kind of market access barriers do you take into account? Do you take into account the MFN tariffs, the a preferential tariffs, ad valorem tariffs, export subsidies, anti-dumping actions, binding overhang? So what kind of indicators do you use for market access barriers, seeing the limitations of the World Bank indicators, for example?
We take into account, we're relatively parsimonious, so we take into account the tariff barriers weighted by reference group weighted imports. We take into account an indicator of non-tariff barriers, which is an index of non-tariff barriers produced by the International Trade Center. We have a measure that that captures the complexity of the trade regime, which includes, which is the average of four measures. It's incidence of specific tariffs, the variance of tariffs, number of distinct tariff rates, and a fourth one that I don't have on the top of my head right now, and the tariff peaks, exactly. Then we take into account the share of duty-free imports as well, because it's an indication on how open the economy is. And in terms of foreign market access, we look at the margin of preference in the main market, as well as the tariffs, the average tariffs faced, weighted also by exports.
Yeah, so one distinctive feature is that we're incorporating both the barriers at home and the barriers abroad, whereas the trade restrictive index would only take account of the domestic barriers, and that's a single aggregate measure. We are, based on econometric modeling, what we're trying to do is a much more agnostic view, but you can see that we have a large number of variables that would characterize a tariff and non-tariff structure.
We have a question from Dominique Jinkyu.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, my question is about Chad. Given our earlier discussion about regional integration and the landlocked country situation, what's the extent to which the ranking of Chad is due to policies of its neighbor compared to the policies of Chad itself? Thank you.
For the landlocked countries, we take into account basically the policies of Chad itself, because it would be otherwise very difficult to attribute the rankings of its neighbors to Chad. Obviously, especially for landlocked countries, these are very highly influenced by what's happening in the neighboring countries that the goods need to be transported through. However, our impression was that there is, at least in most cases, there's some possibility of negotiating access as well. And we have seen some examples, especially in Africa, where this has been done very successfully, and trade corridors have been created and things of that sort. So we basically look at Chad's policies alone, just in order to be able to attribute to just capture mainly the factors that are purview of the government and to incentivize the government.
Well, the first thing is we try to concentrate on things that governments themselves could control. And so that's the main focus, is any one of these things that we have determined could be subject to an influence by policy. But there could be an element in which your question is very well taken, and that is some of the people who respond to the surveys may well be describing their experiences, you know, in the difficulty of dealing with customs or in the delays to which their goods are subject, where, in fact, indirectly, we are capturing the effect of the region's behavior. So it could be that some of the even though our effort is to try to distinguish between countries and give them individual scores, the respondents to the surveys may well be, in a sense, conflating their experiences in any single country, particularly if it's landlocked, with the operations that extend into its regional neighbors.
In addition to the index, the report includes a number of submissions, a number of chapters from our data partners and from our industry partners. One of those authors is to my left, Mark Aubin, is with the World Trade Organization and wrote the chapter on trade finance, which has certainly been a timely topic this year. I wonder if there are any questions from the floor on the topic of trade finance. Yes.
Thank you. I would like to know from this report, if you compare with the past evaluation, has the performance deviated much from the past evaluation? For instance, if you take the first 10 countries, have they held the positions they have held in the past report?
In general, the open countries are well known and they are well represented in the top rankings and top position of the report. We've seen a slight change on the very top, but you know, there's a lot of discussion about how far it is significant. Singapore moved from second to number one. Sweden dropped somewhat, but in general, in general terms, I think that there was not a significant difference in the top 10 or even top 20.
But we need to be quite careful because this is only our second year. And we have what we think improved the methodology, but in a sense we have changed the methodology. In particular, a country like Hong Kong does not have does not have any, with the exception of its relationship with China and its integrated agreement with China, does not have has not signed on to free trade agreements around the world. So it doesn't get any preferential treatment. And this is one of the indicators that describes the export regime faced by countries. So when we have to be careful, because nothing may well have changed in Hong Kong. Indeed, its performance may well have improved in other dimensions. But because we've changed the methodology, its rankings shifted a little bit. So what we hope to do, we worked very hard in trying to pick up a methodology in which we'll now be consistent over time, so we'll be in a better place to answer your question in a more trustworthy way looking out into the future. Okay, yeah.
Yes. Sudan, I know that my country is not in the list, it's not in the 121, but my question is that if you compare the indicators by the World Bank on ease of doing business, which involves so many factors, including credit, financial trade, and all the aspects that can move an enterprise, if it is in trade, if it is in industry, whatever it is. If you compare the trade index with the index of ease of doing business from the World Bank, does it give something that can be used in future for this comparison, that ease of doing business? Like the World Bank now is also making another indicator, they call it Investor Confidence Index. If it is high or low, it is somebody who is working, for example, in Uganda or in Kenya, he might find Kenya is better, and then he trades from that part, not from Uganda. So there are some other indices which also give some clue for trade. Will it be useful to make this comparison or not? Thank you.
As you already mentioned, each of those indicators has a different purpose, and we always need to look in detail at what these indicators are measuring. I think in general, doing business indicators, we include a number of doing business indicators here, those that are related to trade, we included them also in the analysis. So you can, on the country profiles, you can directly compare the performance with the overall ranking. I think it's always useful to compare this type of information in order to identify for every country the strengths and weaknesses and eventually policy questions that could arise from it. So this is what these indicators are made for. But always keep in mind what exactly they are measuring.
Okay. Any last questions? I think we can wrap up. And we will be following this now outside to your left with a reception. We invite you all to join us. I would like to reiterate our thanks to our data partners and our industry partners, several of whom have representatives here with us today, specifically the Global Express Association, the International Trade Center, the International Air Transport Association, Agility, one of our industry partners, and of course, we owe special thanks to our hosts at the World Trade Organization. Thank you very much, and we hope to see you at the reception just outside the door to your left. There are also copies of the report as you exit the room. Thank you very much. Thank you to the panelists.